Time to start. So last time we studied the Noether theorem, which is an important tool in field theory. It tells us that the symmetries are responsible for the conservation laws. And so to understand what quantities are conserved, we need to understand the symmetries of the system. So as an application, we derived an expression for the energy momentum tensor in the scalar field theory. Which is given by this expression. So it's a d nu phi, d nu phi minus g mu nu times the Lagrangian density. So this quantity is conserved. This is a differential way to write down the conservation law of energy and momentum. And if you integrate the zeros component of this tensor over the whole space, then we get the energy and the momentum of the field. And then the momentum is the integral of d3x t0i. So this is the ith component of the momentum. So explicitly, we have checked that this expression corresponds to the Hamiltonian, coincides with the Hamiltonian that we derived by canonical canonical procedure from the Lagrangian of the field. And this is the expression for the momentum. So explicitly, we have that the Hamiltonian is given by 1/2 integral d3x pi squared plus the gradient of the field squared plus mass squared times the amplitude of the field squared. And the momentum is equal to minus the integral over d3x times the canonical momentum of the field, which is a field variable, times the gradient of the field. This is the starting point in principle for the quantization of the field. So we have the Hamiltonian. Pi and phi are canonical variables, so they should satisfy the canonical commutation relations. Pi of x with phi of y should commute on minus I and then delta of x minus y. We don't write h bar because we set it to 1. Yes?
So you mentioned pi is one of the canonical fields. I'm not sure of the vocabulary yet. But so we have pi and we have p. Could you help me distinguish between the roles? Since both of them relate to momentum?
So pi is the canonical conjugate to phi in the sense of quantum mechanics here. So it's a variable that has this commutational commutes on the Kronecker delta, on the delta function with the field variable. So it's a field as well. Now this p is the momentum in the sense that it's amount of motion that the field produces. So it's so it's just that this momentum, not in the sense of canonical variables, but just in the literal sense of the world. It's the momentum with which the field moves. Okay, so what do we do? Well, we need to diagonalize the Hamiltonian then. And in fact, we have already done this for phonons because the Hamiltonian for phonons was essentially the same. So there were some, we used different notations. There were no this term. So this term has a coefficient which was the velocity of sound squared. Now here it is 1, and this is because we set the velocity of speed, the velocity of light to 1. So the changes here are actually minuscule compared to the case of phonons. So I'll just write down the answer, which is obtained the same way. So we construct the ladder operators that are labeled by momenta. This is another P that appears, and this is just the Fourier dual of X. Okay, so we do the Fourier transform, and then we take coefficients from this the expression for the creation and annihilation operators of phonons. Where we should, the only thing that we should change is that the dispersion of phonons was linear, and here we should insert the energy of the relativistic particle. So okay, so these are just expressions for the creation and annihilation operators. Then one can check few of their properties. So first of all, they satisfy the Heisenberg algebra. And second, it's possible to express phi and phi in terms of A. Okay, so we need to invert this formula, then substitute to the Hamiltonian. And this is sort of a longish calculation, but the result is very simple. So the Hamiltonian then is equal to the integral over all momenta times E P A P dagger A plus vacuum energy and momentum is equal to the integral over three momenta of P times the particle density. Okay, so what these three equations show us? Well, they tell us that so the Heisenberg commutation relations tell us that the space in which this operator acts is the Fock space. we can interpret this the state created by a dagger as a state containing a particle. And then the expression for the Hamiltonian and the momentum tell us what is the energy and momentum of the particle. So this E of P is just P squared plus M squared. So in conclusion, the Klein-Gordon field, in fact, describes relativistic particles. So the Hamiltonian is just quadratic and creation operators, and this means that the energy of a multiparticle state is just the sum of energies of particles that are contained there. So the physics here is then pretty simple. It's just a relativistic generalization of the second quantized Hamiltonians that we considered on the first lecture. So, well, this is the end result. We don't need to do anything else. So it achieved our goal. It quantized the Klein-Gordon field. But let me make a few remarks. So the first remark is that while normal ordering the creation and annihilation operators in the Hamiltonian, we produce a constant term, which is the vacuum energy. And this is infinite. So it's as usual, we can regard the Klein-Gordon field as a set of oscillators. And then each oscillator has the zero-point energy, which is h bar times omega divided by 2. So h bar omega is the energy of the oscillator. So in this case, this is just the energy of the particle. So we need to sum over all possible particles' momenta. We need to sum the energies of all possible particles divided by 2. And this is, of course, infinite. So if we introduce by hands some cutoff on the momentum, this would diverge as the fourth power of this cutoff is the coefficient that is easy to find from this formula. So the meaning of this formula is the following. So this means that that the theory that we are studying, as simple as it is, cannot be true to arbitrary high energies. So we need to introduce this cutoff lambda, and the energy simply diverges if we becomes in, the ground state energy becomes infinite if we send lambda to infinity. So it parameterizes in the sense of our ignorance at what happens at very high energies or at very small distances. So in the same way as it happened for phonons, there, when we use the linear dispersion relation, we got a divergent integral. But there, it's easy to understand what happens. We cannot use the description in terms of continuous waves up to the scales that are related to the lattice spacing of the atomic chain. So here, the logic should be the same. So we cannot use this theory up to some very short distances in space. But here we just, since we started with this continuum field theory, We just don't know what happens at short distances. But we can parameterize it in by introducing some cutoff in an arbitrary way. Now, once this cutoff is introduced, then, well, we get some particular answer. And we can simply subtract it from the energy. So we can just cross the last term in the, well, in the expression for the energy and measure all energies from the energy of the ground state. After all, in any physical process, we will be only able to measure the difference between the energies of the initial and final state. So the ground state energy doesn't have much of a physical sense, and we can simply subtract it. So this logic is used all the time in field theory. So we all always need to realize that there might be problems at short distances, and we need to introduce a cutoff. But then by imposing some simple consistency conditions, it's possible to eliminate the infinities. And well, this you'll probably learn in the next part of this course, how it works in more complicated examples than that. So the second remark is that, by quantizing the field, we completely lost relativistic invariance. Well, not completely, because we got the dispersion relation that's consistent with relativistic invariance, but at least it's not manifest, because the Hamiltonian formalism requires picking up time direction. In relativity, time direction can be sort of arbitrary. We can do a Lorentz boost, and then you know that time transforms non-trivially. So let's try to understand how to write that formulas over there in a more relativistic invariant way. So for that, we need to reinstate time. And this is done by passing to the Heisenberg representation. And we will see that all formulas become relativistically invariant manifestly. By the way, do you clearly see my handwriting, or should I write bigger letters? Okay. So in the Heisenberg representation, all operators depend on time according to so the time evolution is a unitary transformation. And then, in particular, we can easily write what is the time evolution of creation and annihilation operators. So I claim that they just oscillate with particular phases. So how to obtain these formulas? Well, the way to see it is to write down the Heisenberg equation of motion for the operator, which is so the time derivative of a Heisenberg operator coincides with the commutator with the Hamiltonian. Now, A and A Dagger, they commute with the Hamiltonian in a very simple way. So the Hamiltonian just raises, I mean, they either lower or raise the energy, so H commutes with A on minus energy times A, and with A bar, A dagger on the plus, A dagger. So one gets a simple linear equation that one can solve, and so this is the solution. So the next step that we can do, we can make, is we can express our field variables phi and pi in terms of A and A dagger, and then substitute this expression for the time dependence. So again, this is a bit of a calculation. Let me just write down the result. So now phi will depend on x and on t. And this will be given by integral over the momentum. So, and in this formula, we can see one nice thing happening, namely that the time dependence combines with the space with the x dependence in a Lorentz invariant expression. So, what is written here is just I minus I times p p mu contracted with x mu. But measure here is not, so first of all, we integrate only over three momenta, and then there is energy appearing explicitly as a prefactor. So this prefactor doesn't look at all Lorentz invariant, but there is a way to bring it to a Lorentz invariant form by reintroducing. So what we need to do is we need to reintroduce the integration over the fourth component of momentum. And for that, we can do the following trick. So you see that here energy appears as a function of momentum because the particle is, once if you know its momentum, then we know its energy. So it satisfies the so-called mass shell condition. So it, its energy is constrained to be square root of p squared plus m squared. Or in other words, its four momentum is constrained to have, to, so its square is equal to m squared. We can represent this in the form of a delta function. So we can write this as a, so we can integrate over the zeros component of momentum. And impose the mass shell condition through the delta function. So of course, this equation has two solutions, right? So strictly speaking, if you write it this way, then we will have solutions with positive p0 and negative p0. And of course, we are only interested in positive solutions. So we also need to integrate over only over positive p0. So here, theta is the step function. it's equal to 1 if p0 is larger than 0 and 0 otherwise. And okay, if we have some arbitrary function of p0 and integrate it with this weight, what we will get is 1 over 2 times the energy, on-shell energy, times f evaluated at the on-shell energy. Is this equation clear for everyone? Yes? There is a little bit of the argument of the delta function here is quadratic in the integration variable, and in the case where the argument is also a function of the integration variable, we need to introduce the Jacobian. So we need to divide by the derivative of the argument. And so this is the origin of the factor of 1 over 2e. So, well, we can introduce this formula in the phi. So you see that, phi is a three-dimensional integral of some expression that depends on EP. So the whole of this expression is just F. So we can do the following. We can introduce the integration over P0, introduce the delta function and this theta. And then in whatever stands there in the integral, in the integrand, we replace E by P0. So after that, phi can be written in a nice four-dimensional form. So first of all, the measure of integration becomes four-dimensional because we introduced P0 integral. Then we have 2 pi delta of pi squared minus m squared. So this pi is already the four momentum. Then we have the theta square root of 2p0. And then ap e to the minus ipx plus ap dagger e to the ipx. Okay, so this expression must be Lorentz invariant because, okay, so the field phi is by definition Lorentz invariant. We started with saying that it's a scalar of Lorentz transformations. So the measure is invariant. Yes. T is so x is a four vector, so x mu is t x. Okay, so then the delta function is also invariant because its argument is a scalar. Now this term is sort of invariant. Well, it's invariant under proper Lorentz transformations that don't change the arrow of time, right? Because if you make a Lorentz transformation that doesn't change the direction of time, then of course pi zero is the zeros component of four vectors, so it will change. But its sign will not. And the step function only depends on its sign. So under proper Lorentz transformations, this doesn't transform. So from that, we conclude that this expression should be invariant. So the rest should be Lorentz invariant, and the exponents are invariant. Exponentials are invariant. So we conclude that the product of (2√2p0) times AFP is Lorentz invariant. Which means that one could have introduced notations where this is called, I don't know, alpha p. And this alpha p would be a Lorentz invariant creation operator. So of course, then this rescaling factor would appear in the commutation relations, right? So there are the commutation relations. On the right-hand side, they would have had twice times the energy. Yes?
I think we're misunderstanding the logic. Why do we conclude that that quantity is Lorentz invariant? As expecting us to conclude that phi of x is Lorentz invariant. What makes that a conclusion?
Well, phi itself must be Lorentz invariant. So we just started from the Lagrangian where phi entered in Lorentz invariant way. So it better be Lorentz invariant once we reinstate the time dependence. So it shouldn't change under Lorentz transformations. Therefore, and this only will happen if, this product of AP and times square root of the energy is Lorentz invariant. So okay, so it's a matter of notations. I don't know, in the textbook that we use for the course, in Piskin and Schroeder, they use this notations where A have canonical commutation relations without any factors on the right-hand side. And then the Lorentz invariance is achieved by multiplying by square root of the energy. So in some textbooks, they rescale, so absorb this factor into the creation annihilation operators. It's all, of course, equivalent these two approaches are completely equivalent. So with this normalization, though, it means that states that we create by acting on the empty state with creation operators should contain extra factors. So the states are Lorentz invariant because this product is Lorentz invariant. But they are not properly normalized, so which is necessary to keep in mind. So in quantum field theory, the Lorentz invariant states contain some energy dependent factor in their normalization. And this is a consequence of Lorentz invariance. Okay, so this was the second remark. Now the third remark is that, let's look again at this expression and apply to it the Klein-Gordon operator. So I claim that what we will get is zero. So why does that happen? So you see that it contains a derivative that acts on x. So x only appear here in the exponentials. So when we apply d squared plus m squared to these exponential factors. So d becomes minus p squared. And so what we get is an extra factor of pi squared minus m squared, which multiplies the delta function. So the integrand then vanishes at the point where delta function has a zero, and therefore the result of integration will be equal to zero. Therefore, the field, the Klein-Gordon field, satisfies the Klein-Gordon equation. So this sounds a bit tautological, but this is now a quantum field that is an operator. So this operator valued function still satisfies the original field equation that we started with. Now, moreover, what's written here is, in a sense, is a general solution of this Klein-Gordon equation. So how would we go on and solve it? We just Fourier transform, and then the equation imposes the condition that the Fourier components vanish on shell, so when p squared is equal to m squared. And therefore, we write, to solve the equation, we just write generic Fourier expansion and then insert the delta function. And thus, we guarantee that that this function will solve the equation. Yes?
I'm familiar with the Maxwell condition. Would you mind explaining it fully in this context?
Okay, so. So the Maxwell condition is a constraint on the four vector that it's equals to, that its square is equal to m squared. If you write this in components, so p0 squared minus p squared equals to m squared. And this is the same as saying that p is equals to plus or minus square root of p squared plus m squared. So this is just telling us that the energy component of the momentum four vector satisfies, is literally the energy of the particle is this momentum. Now, if you draw it in the in the momentum space, then this it's well known that this is a hyperboloid. The solution looks like a hyperboloid, but we only need to pick up the upper branch, this positive energy. So this is called the Maxwell condition sometimes. Yes, off shell means that p is unconstrained. On shell means that p satisfies this equation.
Physically, it looks to me like maybe if something is off shell, then it doesn't satisfy the relativistic energy formula.
Yes, that's true.
So is that possible?
Is that possible? Depending for what? For physical particles, not. But how should I put it? So in some intermediate formulas, we can formulate, let's put it this way. So we can formulate field theory only in terms of on-shell quantities. So in terms of physical particles, and we can study interactions among them. But then the formulas are very complicated. So like if you compare this non-relativistic formula over there and this relativistic one, this is more compact. So this is, in some sense, I mean, here it is still on-shell because of the delta function. But then in some calculations, this delta function doesn't appear. So it's, in a sense, is a auxiliary notion. So off-shell objects, don't really exist, but it's sometimes useful to introduce them to simplify the calculations. Okay, so So the conclusion here is that the field satisfies the Klein-Gordon equation, and then this equation, let's call it star. So star is the general solution of the Klein-Gordon equation. In which the amplitudes are replaced by operators. Well, this suggests to us a way to quantize the field without going through all this procedure of canonical analysis. Introducing this, well, we need to pick time, then introduce the conjugate momentum, impose commutation relations. We, looking at the answer, we could have guessed it in a much simpler way. So this procedure consists in the following steps. So first we write down the equations of motion, and then postulate that the Heisenberg field operator here means that time dependent in the Heisenberg representation is a general solution of the equations of motion. So this general solution will contain some partial waves with arbitrary amplitudes. So this Fourier modes of the field are then identified with creation and annihilation operators. So So Fourier modes of the field are equal to square root of 2 pi 0 times A P or A P dagger. And now how do we tell which of the modes will be A P and which is A P dagger? So which will be creation and which annihilation operator? Well, for that we need to look at the exponential that they are multiplied with. So that's better visible in the upper formula. So you see that the creation operator is multiplied by the positive energy exponential and the annihilation by negative energy exponential. So we can, so if it regard this as a generic solution, we then assign creation operators to positive energy modes and annihilation operators to negative energy modes or negative frequency modes. So these are negative frequency modes and these are positive frequency modes. So they are multiplied by e to the minus I p0 x0 plus etc. And these are multiplied by plus I p0 x0 plus etc. Yes?
Maybe
I'm just
misinterpreting, but it sounds as though we're deciding which of the operators is the creation and which is the annihilation. Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
I thought that was determined by the algebra.
Absolutely. So, in principle, so this is this sort of what I'm describing here is a shortcut how to obtain the right answer. So, in the right way of doing things, this arises from the algebra. But then it always arises in this way. And so since we are going to quantize other types of fields, and I don't want to go through all this Hamiltonian analysis all the time, so I'll just use this shortcut. And it always works, but just... Okay, partial wave means one particular term here with the particular oscillating exponential. So, and then states are created, states in the Fock space are created by acting with the creation operators multiplied by the energy factors. So these three steps, in principle, allow us to, so if we would know them in advance, we would quantize the Klingorn field much faster, just writing down this equation and interpreting correctly and interpreting in the particular way the arbitrary coefficients, amplitudes of the various waves that appear in this equation. Okay, so in what follows, we just will use these three steps. But in principle, one should keep in mind that there is always a canonical procedure with the Hamiltonian, etc., that leads to the same result, but through the longer chain of steps. Do you have any questions? Well, let's make a 2-minute break and then continue.